On December 10th, 1946, one of the worst aviation disasters in U.S. history occurred on the slopes of Mount Rainier. Six transport planes departed from San Diego, California, en route to Seattle, carrying between them more than 200 U.S. Marines. While flying over southwestern Washington, the aircraft all encountered heavy weather and were forced to navigate solely by instruments. Only one of the six aircraft actually made it to the Seattle airport, which had been their destination. Four had turned back and landed in Portland, while the last transport vanished. A two-week search over air and ground turns up nothing. The military offers up a $5,000 reward for information regarding the wrecked plane. In June of that year, while flying around Mount Rainier in search of the wreckage, one man would sight something much more unusual than a downed aircraft. He would have an encounter that would, as some might argue, kicked off the age of modern UFO sightings. This case file joined the theorists as they fly the friendly Cascadian skies with the grandfather of flying saucers in the Kenneth Arnold UFO encounter.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 244, the Kenneth Arnold flying saucer debacle. We didn't decide what the back end was of that one.
Kenneth Arnold, Braden. UFO?
UFO?
UFO encounter?
Encounter, yeah.
Okay, Kenneth Arnold, UFO encounter.
There you go. That's Braden. I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
I thought for sure you're going to try and tag on with some type of COVID.
I thought he was going to cough.
Round two.
I couldn't. I do. It's somehow.
Listen, well, buddy, somehow, we're on to it. We know you fucking purposely French kissed one of your coworkers with COVID just so you could keep that sexy morning voice. Yeah, keep it around a little longer.
Yeah, you'd be getting a lot of compliments
about it and it's fucking gone to his head.
I got tired.
One comment. I was like,
he's trying.
Can we record earlier, please?
He's just got a fucking petri dish before, beside his computer, that he gives a quick lick before the fucking case file starts.
Goes down to the public rail and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I used to spit out phlegm, not anymore.
Gargles it. Gargles it and guts it.
Recycle the
sickness.
That's how
I get this nice rasp.
Yes. Hawks went up. That's a keeper.
Yeah, exactly a year, almost exactly a year for Braden, COVID round two.
Yeah, I mean, I've been sick once before where I thought maybe I had COVID. I just didn't get tested. So this, but no, this is definitely COVID. I tested. I got my little rapid test. Dual lines. Sucks, man. It sucks again. I thought it was for sure be not as bad the second time. Yesterday, I was like, yesterday at like noon, I was like, for me, the worst part about COVID is, both times I've 100% had it, I get the worst muscle aches in my hips. I feel like the tendons from my hips to my knees are tightened to the point where they're going to split. And I have a hard time standing up straight because my tendons feel so tight and my hips get so achy. It's unbearable.
Here's my question. Like, is being excessively sweaty an illness? Because maybe you're immunocompromised. Like maybe something's going on that we don't know about and you're just prone to getting fucking sick.
Dude, I haven't been sick in a long time. I'm never sick.
Oh, wait. Never mind. Sorry, it's obesity. That's what it is, right?
Okay. There you go.
All right.
Well,
that hurt.
Braden health update.
Health update. Fat Braden is back, says Andrew.
A kadeep.
Yeah. We'll see how funny he is. That's the true tell.
Yeah.
I don't know. The COVID brain might suck the funniness out.
Might equal it out. Yeah. Bounce it out.
Anyways, we're taking this case back to an OG we briefly touched on in the past on the Maury Island episode or something, but Kenneth Arnold.
Right.
The OG.
Yeah. we mentioned Kenneth Arnold back in the Maury Island. He was one of the two principal investigators on that case who was dispatched by Ray Palmer. And we talked about it. We'll talk a little bit about him later too, maybe. But I think we talked about that Kenneth Arnold, like Zell said, is one of the OG UFO experiencers or one of the original UFO cases.
Well, specifically for the term, we'll get to it, but the flying saucers, flying discs, and how he kind of described his encounter and how kind of the media took that. But
yeah, Kenneth Arnold on June 24th, 1947, this is a couple weeks before Roswell. So even if you want to you can make the argument that this is when modern UFO study began right here, or they became popular like right around here. And then Roswell kind of just like shot it up into the stratosphere. You know, it's his first stage rocket booster stuff here. he was flying this single engine call air duster near Mount Rainier in the state of Washington, the United States.
What's considered a duster?
It's like a tiny little plane, like a little single engine plane.
That's when you just have a mustache.
Thank you.
Or a trench coat, right?
Yes. Cool trench coat. So he was flying around here. Now, Kenneth Arnold is, he was 32 years old at the point, and he was an experienced pilot with over 4,000 hours of flying time. And he was also a member of the Idaho Search and Rescue Unit with those qualifications. So he had apparently been in the area, and he was going to fly to Yakima for a sales call slash also at an air show, is kind of what I read or what seemed to be going on.
He was just a jack of all trades. He's like, look, I'm going to go just swoop in on this air show. I'm going to hawk a couple fire extinguishers. Right?
Fucking dust fucking some crops here.
He's a hustler. Well,
I think he actually, he used planes. He was like a traveling, I don't think, in the book that he wrote later with Ray Palmer, he kind of refers to himself as like fire suppressing system installer. So I don't know if it's a fire extinguishers or like they actually installed fire suppression systems.
That must have been some heavy duty shit, because back in the 40s, anything catches on fire and it's burning to the ground.
Yeah.
All that's left is the heavy steel outside that everything was made of. Like,
yeah, it was not a good time to label yourself as a fire suppression.
Everything was covered in asbestos.
The spray it all. And, yeah.
So he was actually flying this his little single engine plane around. He decided to take a kind of a detour from his main route to get a search on for a Curtiss C-46 commando transport that had gone missing earlier that year in January. Now, this story about this one, like this plane crashed, and it's a bit, I mean, it's kind of a tragic, a military tragedy, because you had 32 U.S. Marines on board and all of them died. There were no survivors and the plane couldn't be found until later. Yeah, but when
big
Arnold
transport
was,
plane, yeah.
Right. And when Arnold was searching for it, he had hoped to find this craft, or at least the crash site. And there had been a $5,000 reward offered for information concerning it. So he figured that if he could find this, he could claim the reward at least, and then help out those people searching for it. But
he really is a jack of all trades. He's onto the air show. He's the farmer's market. Hawking. He's also on the way. I could also maybe get $5,000.
Yeah. Search and rescue. Yep. So he decided he had been flying up there for a couple hours and he gave up around, reported around 3 p.m. and decided to proceed on his way to Yakima, which is in the southern part of the state of Washington. And then he says that a series of bright flashes caught his eye, and he kind of compared them to as if someone had started an arc light in front of my eyes. And those are his words.
Oh, fuck. Super bright.
So super bright, something flashed
like
at his
blinding,
eye.
Blinding, basically.
Yeah. Arc light. Like, wow. You're like, when you blink, you still see it, basically.
It's like every time you're walking down the road and you see a welder in the distance, what do? You stare at it.
You can't fuck. I hate it, too.
You can't look away.
To it. Like a fucking
moth to a flame.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, I know I shouldn't stare at this for longer than, oh, now I'm 5 seconds. Then, yeah. Now I'm blind.
Yeah.
Brilliantly lit objects flying in front of him. And he figured that these objects were about 20 or 25 or 30 miles away and flying at an altitude of 10,000 feet, like a little above where he was flying. And so seeing these objects
Well, and these things are clipping along. Like he's like, he sees these and immediately he's like, holy shit. Like these things are fucking cruising. And this part of the story to me is the most impressive thing with Kenneth Arnold, because he's also a genius, because I don't know if I would have the wherewithal at this point to have done this, but he's seeing them travel. He basically, he's such a seasoned airman of this area that he knows what the distance is between these two points, like these two mountaintops. And he's like, all right, well, they're about passing the first. I'm going to quickly time it and see how long it takes them to get past the second peak. Then I can do the math and figure out how fast they were actually traveling. What? He's doing this all in air while he's amazed at seeing these things.
And didn't he, like, he sized them up measurement wise too, right? Like he got a full fucking description of them. He got the size and the speed. And like, how long did he have to actually look at these things with how fast they were moving?
Right. He watched them cover, or he seemingly watched them cover the distance between Mount Rainier and Mount Adams. And he used the distance between those two peaks, which he knew off the top of his head, to calculate that these objects, which seemed to be larger to him, in his mind, to be larger than what he compared to a DC-4 airliner. And he got their speed at about, he says, about somewhere in the area of 1,200 miles per hour, so like twice the speed of sound.
So how many parsecs is that?
That's a good question. We need the calculator out there.
Yeah, let's get the calculator out.
Well, and that was his initial like estimate was 1,200 miles per hour, but it's actually more impressive than that. When he got to the ground and actually did the math on the time, like he was just like plugging numbers in his head and he's like, roughly this, it's like 1,657 miles per hour.
So
was
smart,
the actual speed.
So smart, but not quite a beautiful mind.
No.
Not quite. Yeah, he had to wait to land. Well, I read that too, but then also, didn't he go back and say, he's like, that seems way too fast for any type of aircraft. And then he rounded it back down. But even the rounded number back down was still like three times the speed of any aircraft at the time.
Yeah, it was still faster. We were still, I mean, I think Chuck Yeager wouldn't even break the sound barrier until later that year, I think. Like, it's, so it's still, nothing was traveling faster.
Interesting. This guy sees this thing a week later, something crashes in Roswell. Later that year, they break the sound barrier. Interesting.
Convenient.
That's all I got to say.
Convenient, as you would say.
Arnold saw these objects traveling in what he described as an echelon formation, which is like it's kind of like a diagonal line. You can have left or right echelons, apparently. And
it's what we call a half flying V here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Hey, that honestly, because I was works. Like, what the fuck does that mean? And then as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And then
little halfy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you could see them. And then he described them, these objects, to be circular. They were about, each one being about 100 feet across. And then what struck him as extremely strange was that they didn't seem to have any discernible tail. They didn't have any control surfaces. There's no tail, no wings, no nothing. But he was pretty sure that these were actual objects that he was seeing. There was an optical illusion or something like this, because he could, when he was looking at them, he said that these objects like periodically would flip, bank, and like weave side to side. Like they were moving. It's not like just a, you know, kind of a light flashing off stationary, a cloud or something, and just like,
yeah, or stationary object.
Right?
Or
these things were actually,
you know,
moving.
A marine flare floating.
Right. He compared them to like being the tail of a Chinese kite. Like these things were moving around, actually.
Just like, yeah, seemingly getting like whipped around the sky.
And so after Arnold saw these things, he ended up, you know, taking the plane, made his full trip, made a landing. He told some pilots at the airport that he landed, the regional airport that he landed at, kind of talked to some guys, kind of shooting the shit, and told them about what he had seen. And so one of the pilots, Arnold recalls being kind of disappointed or a little bit like kind of, you know, his whole thing kind of being shut down about what he saw, the wonderment kind of taken away, when he said one of the pilots suggested that it had something to do with some guided test missiles being tested from a base located at Moses Lake and nearby. And so he was kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess, like, maybe that kind of makes sense. And
to be honest, this is, we got to remember that at the time, this guy is about to coin the term flying saucer. So he literally has no idea what this could be. He doesn't even have a reference of like, it's flying saucers because he's about to create this. So when someone says like, maybe there are these guided missiles, maybe, I don't know what the fuck they were.
It does, he also like mentioned too, like they seem to disappear like at Mount Adams. So if the distance from their near to Mount Adams kind of seemed like, and it seemed like when they got to Mount Adams, he lost track of them.
Yes. And so he ended up telling his story to some local reporters, Bill Beckett and Nolan Skiff of the East Oregonian newspaper, the day after he had the sighting. So some people kind of picked up on it and were kind of interested in what he had to say. And then this is where you get the origins or the purported origins of the phrase flying saucers. So I think Kenneth Arnold has said that he kind of he didn't use the exact word flying saucer, but he used the word kind of like a cake pan or something like that is what he compared these objects to. And then Skiff ended up using the word saucer-like craft. And that's just what they run with.
There's like internet saying like he didn't say it was shaped like a craft. It said like it behaved like a saucer being skipped on water. Like how
right. Like, yeah. Something like a cake pan being skipped.
Well, And that's how he just like in some of the other descriptions that I read, it's that like these things would just like, you know, erratic, like would just skip like a rock, right? Like they would drop altitude just ever so briefly, then bounce back up and go, and then again and back forth. Like it wasn't just a set flight path where it was just like go. They maneuvered erratically on that flight path.
Well, like bears a lot of resemblance to like now the modern videos and stuff where these things seem to accelerate, drop, like seem to rotate like the gimbal, and like they're not perform straight like a straight line pattern. They're all over the place.
Well, I kind of thought I was kind of thinking too, like one of the things that I was trying to picture myself seeing these things as he did. And then I was kind of wondering, I'm like, you know, we've talked so much about these things maybe having the ability to warp time and space. So it's like, maybe they're not so erratic as we think, but whatever drive or whatever they're using that can bend time and space, when you're observing them from the outside, they seem to just shift in our time, like up and down. And, yeah. And maybe gets even more erratic as they're powering up, right?
But yeah, because like right when we were talking about that, it just popped in my head. It's like, why exactly? Like, what do you think? Do you think they're trying to evade detection by moving erratically like that? Like, what would be the purpose for that? And that makes a lot of sense. That's
or cool. Maybe it's a different, even like a different dimensional being, and that's how we perceive their ship in our dimension, right? Like it's
our eyes just, can't track it properly.
It doesn't make sense in the fourth dimension. You're just like, what the fuck is going on here? It doesn't quite work.
That's cool.
So Beckett went ahead and published a brief snippet of the story, and he submitted it to the Associated Press wire service, and he used the words nine bright saucer-like objects to describe what Arnold saw. And so after he got it there, like after it hit the Associated Press, like this story, it kind of blew up. Like it kind of took, it was almost everywhere. Yeah. And it made it all the way over to the East Coast because you had the Chicago Sun running with the headline, supersonic flying saucers sighted by Idaho pilot. And that kind of cemented the flying saucer into the mind, into the public mind.
That'll do it.
It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny. They like, you even back then, you see like the change of like the sensationalism, even in the headlines as they change, right?
Yeah, and Arnold, by most reports, like when he made his you know, he related his story to the reporters. I mean, he was as skeptical as anybody. He was just telling them what I saw. He didn't, of course, at this point, like we weren't like UFOs weren't part of the zeitgeist. They weren't part of like, you know, the culture as they are now. They weren't as heavily inlaid. And he, you know, you can argue now, like there wasn't the stigma that there is now about discussing UFOs, about like, you know, aerial phenomena and stuff like that. So he's just telling them plain out what he saw. And so this thing kind of picked up and whatever, whether it was, you know, this is a result of the, you know, the Cold War kind of, you know, ramping up and stuff like this. So everybody's kind of be like, is it the Soviets? Who knows?
Well, not only that, at this time, it was still highly speculated that life on Venus or Martians, like they're like Venusians, like there could be, they hadn't ruled anything out yet. So there's still mass speculation. I don't think it obviously wasn't in the public, but then when you see flying, flying crafts, flying discs. Yeah, you could say Russian Soviets.
Fucking Venusians.
Venusians. So I could imagine, because when the article is published, it doesn't say like extraterrestrials piloting flying saucers. It just says flying saucers, supersonic or whatever. And then imaginations can run wild. Or it was ETs. But at the time, it doesn't seem like it was presented as these are ET vehicles. These are like, there's like some supersonic craft. So you could have like made a wild jump. But then, yeah, meet like shortly after you get the Roswell down craft and then they're transporting bodies. That's where it really picks up.
So it's probably debatable as to whether this story might have actually just fallen by the wayside or might have not made that big of a splash if it weren't for another event that happened just a few weeks later. And not Roswell, like we mentioned before, but there was another encounter that commercial pilots sighted some UFOs that their description was very similar to Arnold's. So this encounter involved United Airlines Flight 105, and this was being piloted by Captain E.J. Smith on the evening of July 4th, and it was as it was leaving Boise, Idaho, on its way to Seattle. Now we can call him E.J. Smith, or we can call him Big Smithy, as Arnold.
Let's go with that.
Refers to him as Big Smithy.
Big Smithy.
Dan went on an Alex Jones style rant 5 minutes before the show started that he called him Big Smithy because Kenneth Arnold and him were having a love affair, and Big Smithy. Was they're hanging on a hotel. They're hanging on hotel rooms. It's called a Big Smithy.
It's just a manly friendship, I'm sure. It's very just, you know, very platonic, brotherly type of relationship based upon the similar experiences that they had. Because there's a famous photo that goes around. You have Big Smithy and Arnold. It's kind of like captioned as them comparing notes on what they saw. Like they got them together in the same room to kind of, since their stories were just like, you know, weeks apart, and they seem to have the same description of seeing the same thing, and kind of put them together to be like, you know, we can see what we saw. And I guess
it makes sense to me to have this kind of friendship with someone like this, because it's, if you see something like this and you're like, I know what I saw, and there's nothing that, like, I was there, you weren't, I know what these things were. And it's like all the excuses you're giving me and all these other things, it wasn't that. I know I was there. I was there. And same with Big Smithy. This would be a life-changing, like, if you saw alien craft and you're like, without a doubt, it's a life-changing experience. It has to be, because you're like, this changes everything and no one believes me. So now you have this other person who's like, dude, I saw the exact same thing, and his account's as genuine as yours. I imagine there is some sort of like camaraderie and like knowing that there's something else out there. Like they're probably
this
just
changes is. Everything. More like love changes everything. All right.
I mean, there was just one part. There was a couple parts in the book that I mentioned before.
Big Smithy.
It's got steamy.
This changes everything. Right.
Big Smithy style.
Well, he called him Big Smithy on account of that. Apparently, E.J. Smith
is hung like a fucking donkey. That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's.
when they first met, he was impressed by his size, not his,
his package.
His girth.
You know, he was very tall.
His girth.
But they did get an involved conversation, and there was a point, I think, that they met like later on. They were supposed to meet with some type of military official that had come to like kind of talk to them about whatever, or a friend of them, like an acquaintance, and they forgot about him for 3 hours at the airport while they were talking. And they were talking about their experience and talking about what, you know, what it could possibly be, all that kind of stuff.
Just staring into each other's eyes.
And this guy, it's like, as they describe
each other's sentences,
I just have this picture. They're like, yeah, we went back to the airport. He was just like standing like on the tarmac with like a really lost look, or like in the airport, just nobody had come to pick him up and that they were supposed to go get him. It's kind of a really funny picture. But yeah, Big Smithy said that when they're when his experience occurred, his airliner lifted off a little after 9 p.m. In the evening of July 4th, and then had turned towards Seattle. And then shortly after takeoff, he described five disc-like objects. And he said that one was larger than the rest. And these craft approached the airline head on from, you know, in an opposing course, like straight into them.
Aliens playing chicken.
Oh, yeah.
And his co-pilot, Ralph Stevens, would back him up on this. They both saw it, and they saw that these objects were heading right towards them. And now, Stevens actually thought that perhaps that these were other aircraft. He thought these were other civilian aircraft or something that were up there with them. Just, you know, again, like flying saucers weren't a huge thing yet. UFOs weren't a huge thing yet. So he's kind of going off what he knows. And it's reported that he flashed the airliner's landing lights just to kind of like signal them. Maybe they didn't see them. Maybe, you know, kind of going through his head or something.
What a time to be alive where you could have, like, you would flash your high beams in the sky.
Yeah, it's he was trying to signal them to be like, yeah, you know, kind of be like, hey, we're up here. And yeah. It's reported that in response to this, perhaps in response to this flashing of the lights, the craft actually changed formation several times and then kind of fell in to formation around the airplane, like around that DC-3. So they kind of took a course that was parallel to the one that they were traveling. So they were just kind of being at this. And I think one of the stewardesses actually went on the record being like, yeah, I saw something, or I saw... That's what it's they described. I saw that too.
That they can see anything out the windows with all that cigarette smoke.
It's true.
So the airline flashed its lights and the UFOs seemed to alter their course.
Right. So,
scared them.
And this is where you get the same thing. They described very similar objects to what Arnold saw. They said that there were no wings, no tails visible on all five of these objects. And that for 45 miles, Big Smithy said that he was able to keep these things in sight, and then they kind of peeled off and gone.
They peeled off and they flew towards and lost sight of them around Mount Baker, which was cool because if you know anyone from, you know, Vancouver area or whatever, you're heading down Chilliwack, you can actually see Mount Baker. So there might be a chance that these things were headed up north of the border.
Well, man, if you've never flown over this like Cascadia region, like Northern California, Oregon, Washington, Southern BC. These like the big peaks of this air of like these mountains stick out for you're flying in a plane. Yep. You see Mount St. Helens, you see Mount Rainier, and like way taller than any of the other smaller peaks. Like isn't Mount Rainier is like 14,000 feet, like one of the biggest mountains in North America. It's fucking crazy. Like everything, like there's mountains everywhere all over Northwest. You know, they only get up to like, you know, usually around.
You heard it here first. There's mountains everywhere.
Breaking news. But then you travel over this region and then these like what is it, like 20 peaks or so stick out like
yeah,
much bigger they are when you're flying over top.
When you guys were reading up on this, did you guys read up on William Rhodes at all?
No.
William Rhodes.
Sounds like a wrestler.
Who is he? Who is he?
So apparently about 2 weeks after Arnold's sighting, he caught two crafts on camera in Phoenix, Arizona, and he submitted these pictures to the Arizona Republic, which was a paper at the time. So they published these photos, and Kenneth Arnold actually got his hands on a copy of that newspaper and went to the public saying, "This is exactly what I saw. This is the same shape, same everything." And then when they compared the photos that he took to Kenneth Arnold's sketch, they look like remarkably similar. And supposedly the story goes that I think it was a government official, a Lieutenant Colonel Beam, and an FBI agent showed up at this guy's door and confiscated the film and took it away. And like this again, like Braden touched on already, this was just weeks before Roswell.
Wow. So like a very similar, or if not the same,
It's funny because I was listening to Richard Dolan talk about this, and I did hear him. He was started talking about that at an end of a lecture, but I didn't realize it had connections to Kenneth Arnold. But that makes a lot more sense now.
That's cool.
So with all this thing, like you have all these kind of people in different locations, and now the flying saucer stuff is kind of popping up in pieces, and you have at least one person trying to put the pieces together, and that's Ray Palmer. And Ray Palmer was the American author and editor of Amazing Stories, which was like a science fiction magazine. And if you could, you can actually find old copies online, which are pretty great. And they've got all like science fiction short stories and kind of stuff like this. But he also had a vested interest in the paranormal, like printing these stories and things like that in his magazines.
He's also the Atom.
He's also the Atom, yes. He's also the Atom. Namesake for the Atom, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I swear to God, we said that on the last one, too. Like, I told you guys last time. He's the name. Yeah. He's the actual namesake for the character, the alter ego of the Atom, the DC character superhero.
I didn't know that. I got the Atom number one, by the way.
How much is it worth?
Everybody's looking for one.
Yeah, you got to start selling your stuff. You got to move it.
No. Well, no, these will go in the boxes. Mm. I'll give these to kids. Kid can't touch my comics, so you can crack these bad boys open.
So on July 15th of that year, Ray Palmer actually wrote to Kenneth Arnold and offered him payment for his story. And now Kenneth Arnold, in his book, he writes about how he had offers before, like prior to Arnold's request, or Palmer's request, being like, we want to pay you for your story. Like, will you come and get us the exclusive or whatever? But he was impressed by Arnold's kind of Palmer's sincerity in his letter. Like, he felt like Palmer had a genuine interest in what he was talking about. It wasn't just a story. It was something that he really wanted to know about and really wanted to understand. That kind of is what the impression that he got from the letter. So he agreed to give him his story. And then, so even after that, they kind of started up correspondence. And even Palmer again is offered compensation for Arnold to travel and investigate the event in Tacoma, Washington, which would become known as the Maury Island incident. So, which we talked about before another case file. So it's like Kenneth Arnold kind of became one of the first UFO civilian investigators.
Because he had a firsthand account, was willing to do this.
Yeah. Like him and Big Smith, I think him and Big Smithy were both out there just going, sending, like Palmer was paying them. I think he said like 200, he Western Unioned him like $200 for, to cover expenses. And he just flew over
It makes a lot of sense when you think about this. Like, if you were the first person to like have a sighting like this, you knew, these are like these are like otherworldly crafts. It would make sense to me that you're like, I want to now devote my life to finding out more and finding more people that have seen these things. Like, I need answers, right? When you see something this amazing, I imagine it's life changing.
Yeah, definitely.
The people that he would meet after was a very interesting collection of people. And so here's something that I found interesting was that around the same time, like before he went to investigate the Maury Island incident, Arnold was actually visited by two men from Air Force Intelligence. A2 is what they were designated at this time. And what he describes as a fairly cordial visit by Lieutenant Frank M. Brown and Captain William Davidson. And like, I don't know, it's weird because most of the time, in UFO story or UFO encounters and stuff that people have, or run-ins with the military, Men in Black, all this stuff, you get this feeling that it's a generally like, keep your mouth shut, whatever, don't tell anybody or we'll kill your family or, your dog or, you'll have a car accident at work or any of those kinds of things that really the standard boilerplate encounter with Men in Black. But by Arnold's only like his account, like these guys were really nice when he met them.
Well, it's cuz they didn't know what they had yet, Dan. They didn't even have the Men in Black. They were just like, someone caught wind of the story. They're like, man, we should probably do something about this because we've been picking up these crafts. They're like, hey, you two, go collect what this guy has. So these two guys are like the precursors of the Men in Black of going and collecting, evidence for this. So they had no protocol. There's no protocol of like, hey, make sure this guy doesn't talk. They're just like, grab whatever he has.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Arnold at this time, well, you know, you're just coming off of World War II, so, you know, faith in the military and the government are at an all-time high, pretty much. And it's just kind of, it's interesting to read Arnold's account of him interacting with these military officials because they kind of like started up a friendship. Like they had general correspondence with each other. He would talk to them, write them letters, and they'd respond and all this stuff. But that
all makes sense to me because these guys are tasked, right? They're coming to him being like, hey, we want to go through letters and stuff you have and, you know, take some back. We're researching these kind of things. The military's taking interest. We can't talk too much. He's like, oh, that's so cool, man. I saw these things. I'd love to keep in touch. If you ever, you know, can let me know about stuff. They're like, sure, why not? Like, there's no secrets yet, right? They don't even know what they have yet. So it would make sense that these guys who have now tasked to like collect this information, he befriends them because why wouldn't you? You're looking into the same things.
So it wouldn't be until later that you would get a declassification of the actual Blue Book files on Kenneth Arnold's encounter. Like it was actually investigated by the Project Blue Book and, you know, went over by Hynek, you know, J. Allen Hynek himself. And they have a couple of explanations for what he maybe saw. And like, some of them are like, the first one is... they say in the report, they talk about how Arnold went on to describe the weather conditions of like being very clear that day, being pretty much perfect. And they, in the report, they were saying that this would be a time that you would probably have a good chance of seeing mirages or a good time of seeing what would look like you'd have the sun like beaming off a cloud, maybe a lenticular cloud or something like that. And then that could possibly be something that they saw. Like that could be what he said. And then the other one, it's like the other explanation is that perhaps they were known aircraft and that Kenneth Arnold actually poorly estimated their speed. And maybe like because of his relative position of like where he was going, maybe he saw something aircraft. But the thing is, nobody ever came forward and said, like, those are the aircraft.
Well, they would have to have been like, so if it's almost in formation, that's got to be military. So there should have been some type of record of training mission or something, you would think, right?
Right. And this was before Roswell. It was, they could have just said, like, yeah, we're whatever. And the military wasn't even using, like, I don't even think they were using turbojet airplanes at the time. Well, they had the...
They just got jet airplanes, but not that long ago. They were still right. Not very...
Or they wouldn't have been flying
used.
Like five of them. Like, it's just like, yeah, I don't think they would have been fielding five out of Moses Lake. And it would have been somewhere out in the desert. Like, it seems kind of really strange to do that. So even in the explanations, like these were known aircraft. Nobody came forward saying that, hey, we're flying planes to the air show or we were, you know, moving aircraft from one airfield to another. It seems like a simple matter to just explain it away, being like somebody coming forward and be like,
they explained it nicely because they said it may have been known aircraft, which is the dumbest way to explain something. It's like, what is it or isn't it? Like, take a stance.
Right.
It may have been a lot of things.
but they feel like in Blue Book, they just kind of put a nail in it. And that's what they said. It's like, could have been known aircraft. You know, he misrepresented the estimates. And he might have got the estimates wrong. Like, who knows?
Let's say he gets the estimates wrong. That's fine. These things were still clipping at enough for him to try to conduct this experiment. Maybe it was off and the speeds were less, whatever. It's still more than what we knew was capable at that time.
Right. It wasn't even like they weren't even going, even if they were going that fast, he still would have known it because his original thought of when he saw these things like that initial flash of light, I think Arnold said that he thought it was some like hotshot military pilot, like flying like a P-51, like flying a P-51 that's just like, you know, fully chromed, real nice, and maybe just buzzing him for the heck of it. You know, it would have been a heck of a lot faster than his plane. But, you know, it's like even that, it's like, again, if you're able to explain it by known aircraft, it would have been easy for the military to be like, hey, let's, you know, we could have got flight tower records or something. That'd be like, yeah, there was a flight out of this, especially like five planes, like, or, you know, multiple aircraft flying in formation, just makes a lot of sense to be like, hey, yeah, there was a, you know, there's a flight of these aircraft out of this airport around the same time.
Town. Snowbirds are in town, boys. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. So it just feels weird that's not in there or something. Like, you know, even if they wanted to lie about it, even if they could have said, oh, well, there's a flight, You know, I mean, people could have checked it out and they probably figured that, but.
An ad?
Yeah.
There was another event that was very similar. So it was like, is this the same formation of aircraft just flying around, not telling anyone?
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. And again, you have Big Smithy's report, which is just reinforces that. I mean, they're not exactly in the same area, but it's still like they're up there, like doing something.
All right. We got a little more to talk about, but we're going to grab, well, I guess it's the middle of the day. So not a beer. We're going to grab something to drink.
Penicillin. Yeah,
give Brayden some drugs.
What's that? Trivermectin? Is that the one?
Ivermectin.
A little ivermectin. Cattle grade too. We want the cattle grade stuff.
The stuff that comes in a tube, boys.
Yeah, that's livestock grade ivermectin. That Brayden's gonna go shoot a tube, and there we'll be right back.
Shoot the tube.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Is your vehicle stopping like it should? Does it squeal or grind when you brake? Don't miss out on summer brake deals at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So now, talking about those UFOs that Arnold had originally sighted, and we talked about how they, on their trajectory, they had disappeared behind or seemed to disappear behind Mount Adams. Now, just a little while ago, you had, in this press release, you had Jimmy Church say that he had sighted, and he took a photo of it, and he outlined it with a nice big red circle, that there was an extremely large opening that appeared on Mount Adams, a seemingly regular kind of square-shaped opening that he said that was opened up like possibly into the interior of Mount Adams. And that's where these UFOs were coming from. So
I believe him. It's got a cool name. Fade to Black. Awesome song.
Now he saw this while he apparently was being hosted at what is known as E-SETI Ranch. And E-SETI is an acronym for Enlightened Contact with Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Ranch.
Which is not an acronym, just a ranch. I don't know. Can you call it a ranch? I guess you can, because there's. I thought you like a ranch. You had to have cattle. I guess
ranch. You could be ranching anything alive. So if consciousness
could have kitties or something.
Your consciousness is alive. Ranch. He's farming consciousness to talk to aliens.
They're farming stupidity at Skinwalker Ranch. That's good enough.
No, they're farming portals.
Portals. Yeah.
They can't. Yeah. Living portals. E-SETI Ranch apparently is owned by and operated by James Gilliland, who was previously a successful California real estate salesman who had a brush with death, which changed his entire perception of the universe, as he puts it. And that this occurred when he went body surfing and was apparently swallowed by a sneaker wave and then almost drowned at that point.
Good old sneaker waves.
I thought we were going to say like by Moby Dick or some shit. He said swallowed? Like how about a shark? Like
what's a sneaker wave?
I think it's just like a type of, I'm not
it's
sure.
A sneaky wave.
Well, I think
it's one that you don't see coming. It just sneaks up on you and you're fucking swallowed.
I would imagine a sneaker wave would be something like you're right. So like there's sets of waves and out of nowhere, like
one
springs up behind it and just fucking levels you. I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so with in his experience, Gilliland says that he was projected through a dark tunnel where at the end of it, he met and communed with what he calls the source. And it gave him a choice on whether to go on or come back. And so he came back, and but also with the knowledge that there is, I suppose, more out there. Right. So in 1986,
or he's had a hypoxic brain injury from fucking drowning.
Possibly. Possibly.
Well, it's, you know what? Like I've talked about it before on the podcast. I've done too many shrooms one time and I met the source and they were like, he's like, yeah, you died.
Welcome.
Go back or not? And I was like, well, send me back. And he's like, pick one. And there was like reels of film everywhere. And I like picked the reel and he's like, oh, that's a good one. And then I was falling through the universe and ended up back in my room.
So you could be in a different dimension than when you started, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You picked that one. Like, that's the 4-hour Snyder cut. That's a good one.
Yeah. Oh, well, the voice, I couldn't see anyone, but the voice was like, oh, that's a good one.
So in 1986, apparently he went to Trout Lake, Washington, which is near, I think it's a couple miles, south of Mount Adams. And he said that he knew this was the place that he had been seen in his dreams. And this is where he decided to buy some land and he started what is known as Sattva Sanctuary. Now, for 8 years, that's what it was until one day while meditating at home, he heard a voice in his head that he said was coming from a ship. And his sister apparently came in from outside and told him that there was a UFO floating above the house for some period of time while he was meditating. I don't think he saw it, but he believed her.
Why would she let him?
Were they doing sativa at the Sattva Ranch?
Well, no, you can't do drugs at East Seti Ranch because it is a drug and alcohol-free area. So,
they lost so many clients. They've lost so many clients.
Now, according to Gilliland, there is a base underneath Mount Adams that is used by a consortium of benevolent extraterrestrials. And he said that he has personally been in contact with several of these extraterrestrial races. And he says at least the ones that, some of the ones that he's talked to, he says ones are from Pleiades, the Pleiades star system. He has some that are from the Andromeda galaxy, Orion, Sirius, Arcturus. And he says that there are actually, not only are there benevolent ones, but there are malevolent ones as well. And these ones are what he says are the archetypal grays and reptoids, which actually use
the bad porthole
near Mount Hood to where they base their craft.
My next thing was, so we talked about what he said. There's like a hole, it seemed to be a hole in the side of the mountain.
Yes.
So there is a video.
Number of mountains, apparently.
Well, that's what it is. So say, I mean, the video doesn't show, it's hard to tell. It's a cave, I guess, but it doesn't seem like, it's not as sophisticated. What was the case, Pine Gap, where they have the really fast opening and closing door?
Right.
The
ETs? Yeah. Doesn't seem like one of
unbelievable.
Unbelievably fast opening and closing actuated door. This one could be a cave or it could be a shadow. It's really hard to tell. But let's say it's a cave or an opening. I mean, all these mountains are volcanic, so there probably is like giant lava tubes and stuff. I'm not sure how much it's been explored. I'm sure there's some caving you could do on some. But yeah, I read the 5 different species of extraterrestrials inhabit either this mountain or other like as Mount Hood. So maybe there's this interconnected tunnel through all of this. They even said, like other mountains in the States, like they're all either they're connected by a natural cave or they have like bored caves. And then we're making the joke before the podcast, Elon Musk is trying to tap into the system with the boring.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Like it's all there. These are all connected. So Palmer said like he witnessed these UFOs seem to disappear like into Mount Adams, or like it could have been around it, but say they went, like there's a hole. They go in, they park down below, they could fly from mountain to mountain.
So I was looking at this because I was like, oh man, maybe we should like, East Seti Ranch is not that far from us.
We can't do drugs, so we can't.
Yeah.
Well, there's other reasons why we can't go as well. Not just that. So it's first off, it's run by the Great Spirit.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's run by the Great Spirit. So, you know, dates you can book may just black out eventually, depending on if the Great Spirit is. But I was just clicking now to see if we could book any, and it says, please read before booking. this season, Ysetti staff are aware that many potential guests to the ranch may have received one or more of the experimental SARS-CoV-19 injections that are subject to emergency use. However, these injections have not been fully approved by the FDA to ensure long-term safety and efficiency of the human populations. Based on the review of the data of the CDC's VAERS, Ysetti staff are requesting that anyone who has received one or more of the experimental SARS-CoV-19 injections refrain from attending events in person at the ranch for the 2022 season. Ysetti and its staff do not carry insurance coverage to manage potential adverse events and reactions that may occur for injected guests while visiting the ranch and are not willing to assume such risks. Due to reports of adverse effects in uninjected women and children, especially in pregnant women who share living spaces with those who have received the experimental injections, Ysetti staff will await deeper scientific investigation and study into the potential effects of shedding and or transmission of spike proteins between those who have received injections and those who have not before reconsidering this position and facilitating an environment where uninjected individuals, women, and children may be put at risk.
Wait.
My fucking brain hurts so bad.
So you can't go if you're
so bad.
If you're vaccinated.
But how risk are they of shedding. Know?
Exactly. But for risk of shedding, they're saying that's like their main concern. Yeah. But you can just go and be sick and just go.
Yeah.
It doesn't say like.
Yeah, I can.
They must not ever leave the ranch, I guess, either. I mean,
well, I'm just going to say,
I could be sick and I could just pretend like, oh, I have a cough, like, oh, it's allergies. I could be super sick with COVID and just go there.
Yeah.
Would be like, it's just the flu. Well, as long as you don't have the dirty vaccine.
I guess.
They don't have insurance to cover vaccinated people.
What is it? Are they trying to guard against sudden adult death syndrome or whatever they call it?
Yeah.
You just go there and you die. And it's
the big sads.
Sads.
The big sads, yeah.
You just show up, you die.
Yeah,
we don't have coverage for that.
So. Yeah, it's a trip. I read a couple articles about this place, this Ysetti Ranch, and it's like it kind of pops up in a couple things, especially with that press release about there being a door on the upside. And like Zell said, I think there's at least one TV show that has gone up there in a helicopter because it's not that hard to be like, that's, you know, they pointed out one area that was possibly that thing. They said it looked like it was a piece of kind of like maybe the rock shelf that kind of come off, and they said that maybe during evening hours, like you would catch like a door here. But apparently, like this place, like they take out people on regular nights. I guess their biggest kind of selling point is like their sky watching. Mm-hmm. They have like a sky watching
in the field outing. Of dreams. It's called
in the field of dreams. And you go out there totally sober because it's alcohol and drug free, and you go out there and you watch the night sky, which, I mean, sounds peaceful, sounds nice.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. That sounds fun.
Yeah, sounds pretty good. You know, and there's plenty of videos on their website of people like pointing out things that are being like, these are the UFOs up there. Like they'll point out objects and they said that these objects are traveling in and out of Mount Adams or traveling overhead. And it's very, I mean, it gives me very much like Stephen Greer vibes.
Well, that's like, what I mean. Like Stephen Greer's probably got a lawsuit against these guys because they're kind of stepping on his toes a bit with the C-SETI, E-SETI. One's consciousness, one's, what's the E for?
What did I say? Enlightened.
Enlightened, okay.
So, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, so it's, that's really strange. It's like, it's really, really similar. I was like,
Do you have to sign an NDA to go?
I don't know, actually. I'm not sure. I don't think so. It just seems, it's really strange. Like, I mean, this guy Gilliland, like he's got, I guess he has a kind of radio show or a YouTube show or something that he puts out. And it's really funny because it's like, he's got this really like normal photo of him, like not like a hedge, not like a professional headshot or anything. It's like you took it out in the middle of a field with like a crappy gear. And it does like an anamorph into like a lion. And
oh yeah.
Great bro.
I was seeing a lot of stuff about like the lion it's like Enter the Lions Gate.
Right. There's a lot of talk about Stargates and stuff. And it is this, like, I'm pretty sure, like, in the design for his logo, like, that's the Stargate from the
TV show. He exclusively wears Mexican sweaters now.
Yeah. Is that real?
If you're interested in SETI.org and you get there and you have to click Enter the Lions Gate to get to the website.
I like it.
And I'm in the Lions Gate right now.
I'm in. yeah, it's an interesting thing. And this thing kind of got me thinking. It's like, dude, like when does, because Gilliland, like on the website, he talks about kind of like his whole, either his experience with the contact with extraterrestrials or his kind of just general outlook on life and what these extraterrestrials have knowledge that they've imparted to him, talking about stuff that we kind of heard before with other UFO contactees, talking about, or at least some of them, those are that don't get like the weird like triangle up the rear treatment, triangle Strebers. Yeah. But you get the some of the people talking about how, you know, extraterrestrials and think like Betty and Barney Hill, like how humans are, like, we're kind of like a disappointment. We're like, you know, we're ruining the planet. We're too industrialized and all of this kind of things. Like we're moving too far from nature. A lot of this stuff is apparently what the extraterrestrials have told him.
All right. Whatever you say, George Guidestone.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
but it's just this weird thing that it's like, yeah, like the aliens are going to come down and they're going to save us at some point, or they're going to make themselves known. And it just, it gives me those ringings of just like, it's almost cult vibes. Not quite. You know, it's like, when does the whole kind of interest in UFOs, like we have a general interest, when does it become like almost like a religion? Like it's
the Lionsgate cult.
Like when you step through the Lionsgate.
It's a Lionsgate cult. Was it the Heaven's Gate cult?
Yeah, that was the other one. Yeah, that was the new one.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
I mean, I just saw a video of him talking about how they do have an eSETI Hawaii coming soon. And
that's the one.
That one sounds awesome.
That one
should be at the top of the volcano too, at the very top.
Yeah.
Very top.
Mount Haleakala. That's the one on Maui. What's the big one on the big island called?
I forget.
Bigger. I on a Maui is actually pretty dope.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing about being like, you know, UFOs probably might have some interest in volcanoes. Like there's some connection there. That
people power their craft from geothermal power.
It's true. Yeah. That is a...
got unlimited energy in there.
it's just one of those things that I'm like, when does it, because it sounds a lot like a religion. It sounds a lot like to be like, yeah, the aliens are going to come down and save us. You just, you know, you replace aliens with your choice of deity, Jesus, you know, Buddha, well, I mean, whatever.
It's like, a cult now. You need more people for it to be a religion. That's the only difference.
Right. I guess you don't really have to buy into anything for him. It's like, it's not really a religion because he's not really demanding anything. It's just you turn up and you kind of whatever. But
project your consciousness and you see names. Yeah.
Which I mean, there are always lights in the sky now. It's like you got Starlink up there. It's like you're always going to be able to see it. There's so many satellites. It's like, yeah, you could think and you would see a satellite. I don't want to be out of the.
And I was reading that like only the eSETI staff can use the laser, so they point out the objects.
That's
so
it's right. Like lasers.
I would go there's nothing wrong with going.
I'd go
like.
I'd go 100%.
That'd be super fun.
Sky watching sounds fun.
Day or two?
I was like, but we wouldn't have to go. I mean, you wouldn't have to go there.
I could say you went. You know what? I think I could run a better version.
Yeah, there. See? Yeah, that's what I want. I want Zell's.
Mine involves drugs. I guarantee you will see something.
Can we call it the Zellfire Club?
You're damn right we can.
Cool. Zellfire Ranch.
Yeah, Zellfire Ranch.
It'd be so fun. You would for sure, you'd see a lot of cool shit.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, if we had aliens. An ATT ranch, I figure ours would be way more fun.
we have a camp ATT forming a little bit.
That's true. I mean, from the stuff I read about the place, like, I mean, you can bring your own camping gear, but they also have a couple like cabins, yurts to kind of rent out, but it's pretty much like bunk beds with like dream catchers inside. That's pretty much it. Very bare bones type of place. I mean, I don't know what ATT Ranch would have. Like what? It's like we'd have a karaoke.
Everyone gets a laser.
We'd have a karaoke machine at least. Like
we give everyone laser pointers You smoke a big joint,
and literally then everyone's air traffic can.
Yeah, everyone's blind. Everyone's blinding planes as they fly over top.
Hit them.
Blind them.
Yeah, it's one of those strange things that you kind of hear about that it's like, yeah, it's like, is this guy for real? I don't know. Like it's people have these experiences, and a lot of people have other people have had these experiences, but you know, for me personally, I find it a little bit worrisome. It's just like, yeah, this sounds a lot like Stephen Greer's thing, but you know, you have to pay all in cash. You have to pay in cash.
Like Stephen Greer went there and went, ooh, I could do this better and make way more money.
Out in the middle of the desert. Like, I don't know. It's an interesting little tidbit of information that, you know, are UFOs. I mean, there is that kind of theory that they are, you know, there are secret UFOs under some bases. Like we said, like Mount Shasta being one of the big ones. I think Mount Hood and like, you know, underground anything. Like, is that, are these entrances to Hollow Earth? What is it?
Yeah. Like, know that the earth is like honeycombed with a bunch of caverns and lava tubes. It's just like usually.
Yeah. Cause most of those mountains in the Pacific Northwest, like those were volcanoes at some kind. I mean, mountains is a volcano.
A lot of those mountains are active volcanoes in 1,000 or 10,000 years. They're not classified as dormant. Like they are active volcanoes and they could erupt at any time. Like back, what was it, 1980 something? Mount St. Helens just blew up. So half the mountain's gone. It's fucking just exploded.
And now Bigfoot lives there.
Great spot. Yeah, but like, I mean, all the, like, yeah, active volcanoes. So like honeycombed with lava tubes. It's just like, I find like if there was a giant underground cavern, an opening on the land wouldn't be very big, I don't think. I think it might open up as you go in. Closer to the surface, the rock becomes probably more, like it's more unstable. It's more susceptible to weather and freezing and landslides and...
I'd like to discuss with them like what distinguishes the benevolent ETs from the more malevolent ones. They says like the Greys and the Reptoids. Like what
some
makes
probe
them...
you, and the others just have sex with you.
Oh, which that's just probing in a different way.
Or natural.
I mean, what
probing?
If you're a person who's into probing? Then it's like I guess you're win-win.
That's
true. Like
best of both worlds.
I think that's how he decides if they're malevolent or not. He's into
Did I consent? I'm in.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he just has a thing against Reptoids. Like, maybe they're, you know, maybe he's a space racist.
Scary little bastards.
Space racist. Oh, the scaly bastards. Like, come on, man. They just look weird. They're harmless. Like, no. Like,
until they reach out and slash your guts out with their reptilian
claws.
They're
cold-blooded. It's like, wow, now that's racist. But yeah, it's you know, it's an interesting little tidbit of information because I don't think there's any shortage of these places. There's more than one. Like we talked about Stephen Greer's. Like there's plenty of these kinds of places that promise you, you know,
Stephen Greer's got a fucking app, so you can do it anywhere you are in the world for $49.99.
Right, and yeah, like I said, this place you have to pay in cash, so that's kind of weird. Little bit shady, but I don't know. Maybe they just don't like, they don't want to go through the middleman of having a payment processing thing, but
they want to go through the middleman called the government paying taxes.
Yeah, they probably owe a lot of money in taxes, and this is their way.
And a bunch of money buried in coffee cans on the ranch.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Interesting. I mean, probably, I don't know if I'd drive out there to go to that place. It doesn't sound
if I was
fun,
in the area, like I'm not making the trip just for it, but if I'm out there.
Yeah.
We'd lie. We'd get in there somehow.
So what are they going to do? Check? Like,
I'd line all like the waistbands, my sneak in drugs.
I get just
the guy looks like the biggest stoner in the world. Come on, people.
I do. He's just wearing ponchos like 24/7. Like, he's
just eat edibles. Why are we sneaking in joints? It's just sneaking edibles.
I don't know. I'm a joint. Well, I guess if you eat enough edibles, then you can hallucinate a little bit. So, okay, we'll bring both. It's not short. Let's not short ourselves.
It's settled.
Here.
Yeah, it is settled.
Brain can meet the source again. Like, hey, you're back.
Fucked up again. I'm running out of good ones to put you back in.
Yeah, it's cool. Like the Kenneth Arnold, like the initial sightings of UFOs and like how it gave, if like how that kind of. Now
this is now where we're at.
It would have been something. It would have been something different, I guess, if like if Roswell never happened. So whatever you think about that, like if more stories didn't happen immediately after this, would this have been as well remembered?
Or like when did UFOs become like spiritual almost? Like it's almost like a spiritual experience now. Because, you know, the Kenneth Arnold is a very physical thing. It's very just like cut and dry. This is what I saw, you know, trying to figure it out what it is. Was it like when the Betty and Barney Hill stuff started? Like there is some...
Was it when they started coming and terrifying people in their homes?
I mean, there's probably a line somewhere or an event that kind of marks that shift. And I'm kind of, you know, we'll probably figure it out as the more we look into all of these. But it's like, you know, keeping that in the back of your head, like, I think it's an interesting thing to kind of look into as to whether, like, when did aliens become the saviors? When did they become the gatekeepers of spiritual consciousness? Apparently, like, that's
it's the fucking dawn of time. Look at all the fucking religions. Those are all aliens, bud.
Alien.
Gods are aliens.
I'll tell that Jehovah Witness every time he knocks on my door. He won't agree with me, though. I'm going to get him one day.
Just give him a hum to Allah. He'll get over
it. Wait, I wouldn't be able
to. Are you sure?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'll save that for after. Okay. Actually, I was going to say the scariest Muslims are white.
Oh, no.
Just kidding.
But it's... I don't know. I think that's something interesting to look into, where it's just like to think about, like, when did this really become, when did it go from a very nuts and bolts to I don't know what most people call it, the woo, and to get into there. So,
well, if there is a galactic spanning like civilizations, like multiple different ET species, some good have found Earth. Like who knows? Maybe there is some like we bring you love type of aliens. Like do this, don't do that, stop burning oil and we'll save your planet. And other ones are like, we're here, we're slowly hybridizing your species. We're gonna kill all of you and take the planet.
I mean, why wouldn't there be though? Like that's the same in the human race. We have those. We have bastards, we have humanitarians and we have greedy bastards that are stealing everybody's resources and invading other countries for fucking no reason.
Yeah, like the majority of humanity
is losing, but
good people. Like everywhere you go, good people everywhere. And then it just takes one bad person, well-spoken bad person, get a few other people on your side, a couple of weapons, and then that's all you need. Take over like unarmed villages all the time. So it could be easy, like all their 99% of ETs are peace, love, you know, galactic travelers. They're just traveling to planets. They like they're scientists. And then it takes
it all takes is one Thanos.
Yeah, one.
Just one.
Key species with the same technology. And then you transform that technology into weapons, plasma rifles, and whatever the fuck else you can make.
Triangle probes.
And yeah, that's it. Just takes one bad egg in a galactic sea of great aliens. I guess until, they start wiping us out or we're saved. We're probably not really going to know. Fun. Earth's a battleground.
take us to the good one.
Earth is going to be the battleground, the final battle.
Well, but then, I guess it's like, if they wanted the planet, like why would they have it as the final battleground?
That's a good question. Good.
Ask them.
Ask them. It's a good movie though.
I'll go to East Eddy Ranch and I will ask them.
Reach out. Let us know what they think.
Got it.
Who do we have this week for Theorite of the Week?
That Andrew picked it.
Okay, this week's Theorite of the Week is Ty Halone. Ty made a couple really cool drawings for us. One of them was a while ago. It was a Bigfoot driving a UFO, right?
Yeah, with
right.
Our little logo on UAP. The side.
And then this week, he just recently posted a UFO... beaming up some pancakes.
A good old Italian entity.
Salty pancakes.
Yeah. Really cool drawing.
Weren't they salt? No, they were saltless. They were totally lacking
salt.
In salt.
Oh, no salt pancakes.
Yeah, they were lacking in salt. Pancakes. Upon chemical analysis, they were lacking in salt.
Damn it. So. Aliens want our pancake recipe. That's why they're here.
Thank you very much for those. You are this week's Theorite of the Week. We appreciate it. All right. And if you're not supporting the show and you want to support your boys, your favorite podcast, you know what to do. AlienTheorist.com, hit that support button, Patreon, Supercast, gain early access, ad-free, Okay. 660 or episodes in total.
We need six more and then we're
done. So that's including all the case files, all the cosmic channels, all the bonus, all the extra shows. It's like 660 episodes.
Yeah, six more, then we're done. That's it.
Finish it off. 666, we're done.
We got a full year pledge from Nazish Ahmed. We got Diabuddy. We got Brainwashed by Captain Specificity with a year pledge. Another Year by Strange Sapien. Felicia the Shakes. Felicia the Shakes. We got Aaron.
Nice.
Oh, that's going to suck.
I like this one.
Douglas Kara Gelseco.
Galasco.
Kara Galasco. I like this. Wayne. We got Wayne. Wayne over here. And finish it off with Kelly Hendricks.
We got Robert Sear. We got John. Kristen Lack. Russian. Uh-oh. Who hadn't heard me talking bad about him? Listen to After Hours. Yellowbird. Oh, Dan is supporting the show at the lowest tier. Just kidding.
So much for Dan. Podcast.
Gabrielle Baum. El Buzzbo. Tenko and Tessa H. Thank you very much for supporting the show. We appreciate it.
And before I say their thing, head to our merch store. This is your last chance to buy July merch before the store shifts into our August merch. Check it out now. And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
Peace.